Let's say something real quick.
Something.
Well, welcome to Drat Veterinary Podcast. I am Dr. Alfred Tam, and today I have my very first guest. Very, very exciting. We have Dr. Megan Barrett over from Hawaii. Say hello.
Hey, guys.
So we met 2 years ago at Colorado State University. I am a Caribbean student from Ross, but I did my last year over at CSU. Megan was there all 4 years, but you were also there before, right?
Yeah, I did the last year and a half of my undergrad at CSU and then took 3 years off to work in between.
Okay. And so you're born and raised from Hawaii.
That's correct.
Okay. And that's pretty cool because I don't think a lot of people are from there. Relatively small island. We've been hanging out the last couple of days. What are you doing here in Miami? Sorry, Florida.
So I'm here in Florida finishing my last few modules of my canine rehabilitation certification. So the title that I'll get was a CCRT, and it's basically doing physical medicine for dogs. So I'm really excited about that. Almost done.
Yeah, that's really cool. I mean, what you were saying, how long is that program now? Like just in terms of the average course of getting all the modules taken care of, getting the classes, getting that certificate, the whole shebang.
Yeah, so the course that I do it through is CRI, the Canine Rehab Institute, and they offer the courses in both Colorado, Florida, and other international locations, usually every couple months. So from start to finish so far, I've been working on it for about 9 months.
Wow.
And then I'll be done in about 2 months.
Okay. So just about a year's worth of stuff.
It can take up to a year and a half, depending on how quickly you're going through.
Okay. What kind of got you into that? Because, I mean, obviously we like animals, we like pets. Was there like a particular moment or some phenomena, or has it always been kind of something that you've been passionate about from the beginning?
Yeah. So, I mean, in vet school, you know, like most other vet students in first year, like I was part of every club. Yeah. You know, I didn't really know what I wanted to do. I kind of wanted to do everything. But the things that I ended up staying the most involved with were like the pain management clubs and the holistic medicine club, in addition to on the other end of the spectrum, like zoo medicine and aquatic animal medicine. Mm-hmm. Which those are two, basically kind of my two areas of interest are marine species and then physical medicine and acupuncture. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I am a athletic person. I used to be a dance instructor and have had a lot of injuries of my own over the years. So
I've spent a lot of time with the physical therapy
myself. And I'm just really have always been fascinated by like the way the body works and the way it heals and things you can do to make it heal faster, because obviously it sucks to be in pain and injured. And then when we see our animals in pain, like I want more tools to fix that. So that was kind of my interest, was how can I make them stop hurting?
Yeah, because I think I've noticed like we're really big on surgery nowadays. And like a lot of people without a blink of an eye go forward with the TPLO, go forward with the hip replacement.
Yeah.
But how many do you actually see go then at post-operative care for physical therapy?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think it's becoming more recognized to do rehab for pets. Just like with humans, I think it's fairly common for a surgeon to recommend physical therapy after. But yeah, it seems like common sense in a way, but it's also not done all the time. I mean, if you get surgery and then you sit in a cage for 8 weeks, you're going to come out of it with a lot of atrophy and a lot of reduced strength and, you know, all those things that you need for functional movement. Mm-hmm. especially with the dogs, since they tend to kind of do crazy things out of the blue, like chase a squirrel or, you know, jump out of the car without like having any conscious control. Mm-hmm. So they really need to be strong enough to support the things that they're doing, okay, or they're going to get re-injured.
Okay. So your job, I'm guessing, is not only to be able to kind of help with the overall pain with our patients, but also the compliance with the owners, because there's probably a lot of tricks, a lot of things that you have to teach them to go home with, right?
Yeah, definitely. Okay. So yeah, generally, if you get, for example, like a post-op patient, you're going to be in the acute phase focusing mostly on pain management. Then once they get to the subacute phase, then you'll be mostly focusing on getting strength back with gentle exercises. And then in the, you know, later phases, like the chronic phase, then you're really trying to build strength and mobility for functional use of their joints and muscles and everything.
Okay, cool. So ultimate game plan, I mean, would it then be to like kind of open your own practice for this kind of stuff? Or is it something that a lot of vets who get specialized in this field, they, or certified in this field, they do a lot more travel and kind of mobile clinic kind of stuff?
Yeah, so there's definitely a good mix, which is a really nice thing about it, is that if you get your training and certification, then you have the freedom to take that mobile. You can do it in your clients' homes. You could have it set up at a brick and mortar practice. You could go to like a, you could have a an LLC where you're going around to different referral hospitals or other GPs and doing it, you know, kind of in a mobile but in-house. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I mean, I just recently heard about a vet who went through the program and then set up a rehab facility, if you will, on the beach.
Oh,
it was kind of like a dog boot camp.
Only in Hawaii.
Yeah, I think he was actually in California.
Oh, wow.
But still, it's I'm like so inspired by that to try to maybe integrate that and have a like a once a week thing.
Because they could use the ocean, I'm guessing.
Yeah, as totally. The ocean or the free, deep yeah. sand and very you know the grass cool. and get everything out and just do like a stations where they can go through.
That's so funny. Like I would imagine people, we've been at the beach and kind of joke about it, but to actually, and you know, talk about these kinds of things, but to actually implement it. Well, kind of change gears a little bit. I know, you know, we've talked a lot about self-identity. I kind of talked to you a little bit about my last episode of my podcast, but also you're a very big advocate for mental health and overall wellness. Is that correct?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. Can you tell me more, a little bit about that?
Well, I mean, like a lot of people these days in our profession have recognized the difficulty of maintaining a work-life balance and the consequences of that with, you know, suicide rates and just burnout, compassion fatigue, all those kind of terms that are becoming more like popular. And it's good that they're becoming more popular because they're in the vocabulary now of our profession.
Finally.
Yeah. And so, yeah, I mean, basically, if you wanted to become a vet, you probably had some reason deep in your heart for wanting to do it, right? Like no one does this strictly for the money or the prestige or anything like that. And I just think it's really sad when you let your profession consume your life and then it turns into almost like a prison and, you know, your downfall because you can't enjoy your life outside of work. So it's almost, I don't know. I think it's really important to have a balance where you enjoy your job and you also have your life outside of work where you can, you know, learn other skills and have other circles. Mm-hmm. But everyone's different. You know, I know some vets who they eat, you know, sleep and breathe vet med, and that's great for them.
And they're still very stable.
Yeah, they love it. And there's plenty of people who are, not to say, you know, you can't do that and be happy and successful. But I think the people I notice who have more of the mental issues, you know, or unhappiness issues are just, they just need to like go outside and figure out.
Take a step back.
Yeah, take a step
evaluate back. What their actual mental health is like. Ask themselves how they're feeling. Yeah. What exactly is going on
and
in their lives.
And just remember the big picture of your life is, you know, your family and friends and nature and enjoying all the things that your time off has to offer you.
The little time off we have for the most part.
Okay. Yeah. I think the other thing too is that, and I think you had talked about this previously in your other episode, that we in our society are not taught to set boundaries, particularly with time. And yeah, I think that it's a good to be aware of how you're managing your time when it comes to work and, you know, creating boundaries around your personal time off so that you can check out of work, you know, and come back refreshed.
So what are some things on your personal level that you do to kind of keep balance? Because obviously, you know, we're all very different. I think, you know, I've talked a little bit about what I like to do that kind of keeps my whole life level. I would imagine living in, you know, in California, living in Chicago, Texas, or wherever, in Florida, whatnot, versus Hawaii. I feel like Hawaii does kind of have its own special culture compared to a lot of different areas of the states. So I would imagine your interests and kind of what keeps you level is probably maybe a little different or maybe completely similar to what I do. But what are some things that kind of make you happy?
Yeah, I mean, I have a lot of hobbies, a lot of interests.
In one word.
Probably too many. I mean, there is not one word, to be honest. I love music and dance and fitness, nature.
You told me
the
ocean. You're a DJ.
Yeah.
On the side. your stage name is Wolfus?
That's right.
Okay. And so it's electronic, correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's mostly EDM and house, different variations, subgenres in that realm, but yeah.
That's really cool.
So mostly play at like parties and clubs, just at events that my friends put on, which is we were talking about the other day, you know, like I feel really lucky in Hawaii that I have a community of fellow kind of musician, artisan types where we are, you know, creating these things and having events and, you know, things like beach cleanups and events that we're trying to promote sustainability and also have a good time. Mm-hmm. So, it's really fun to do that through music and, you know, connecting to that when I'm outside of work.
Yeah, I don't think many areas like this have such a nice community of people who you'd be able to kind of, hey, let's kind of jam a little bit and just enjoy some music together. That's
it's very Hawaii unique. It's a big, small place. So, it's not uncommon if you're going around, like you'll see people, you know, all over, and so it's nice in that way that it's not, I feel like in some big cities or more rural areas where it's so spread out, it's hard to keep overlapping with the same people, just doing your daily life. I really feel really lucky in that regard. And, you know, Hawaii has so much to offer in terms of just like beautiful nature and like free things to do outside. Like going surfing is free, you know, but like, when I lived in Colorado, if you want to go skiing, that's going to be $500. So that kind of bothered me when I lived there, just the cost for enjoying. Like even going for a hike, you have to pay to park. Mm-hmm. Like that's not unheard of where I'm from. So I think it's nice when nature is free, then you're going to utilize it more as a escape, you know.
So what are some things about Hawaii that you actually like better on out of the island? So like, let's say in Colorado, what are some aspects of Colorado or wherever else you've been in the States that you prefer over Hawaii? Does Hawaii have any kind of downfalls or shortfalls that kind of frustrate you at all?
Well, me personally, the one thing I really miss is, again, music wise, that there's not as much, of a music scene there in terms of like big acts coming through.
Interesting.
Like when we lived in Colorado, it was all, you know, Red Rocks and Pepsi Center and the Mish and the Aggie, and this, there are like so many venues that you could just go to pretty much any night and see someone famous perform like an amazing concert. In Hawaii, you might have a headliner come through like once a month, or maybe a couple per month, but maybe, you know, one that you really want to go see. So it's still there, but it's not the same. And it's really nice when you have like your pick of everything. Like, living in Colorado was definitely, that was, I think, my favorite thing about it.
It was the music scene. Okay. And the beer scene.
Yeah.
RIP New Belgium. Yeah. So you were telling me you also do something called poi. Yeah. Can you explain that a little bit?
Yeah. So poi are a dance apparatus that you, like, basically there's different types of poi. There's glow poi, there's fire poi, and they're basically things that are like on the end of a rope and they're swinging around, and it's kind of like an art form of dance where you're like dancing with the fire or the LED. And so, yeah, that's another one of my hobbies and interests is flow arts, which I think is something a lot of people don't know about.
No, you showed me, and I was looking at it for like an hour.
Yeah.
Just
I know, it's enamored. Really cool. It's something you might see if you go to a music festival, and there's performers up on the stage, and they're dancing with some cool lights or some fire, and making it look really effortless and seamless, but doing these like crazy geometric patterns, and just flowing, and so. It's really cool to do that because you're, once you get it to where it's second nature and muscle memory, it's almost like you're speaking a language through your body. You don't have to think about the movements. It just like happens and you can just like let it
go.
Flow, literally.
Cool. All right. So you have physical therapy. You have your music. You have your dance. So you obviously... You know, this is very apparent that you are all about kind of well-roundedness, balance, and just kind of, it kind of helps define other aspects of you as opposed to, oh, I'm a veterinarian and this is all I am.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. And I guess that's quite important to me. So that's also really impressive to see you do so many cool things.
Thanks.
I mean, and so I've known you for about 2 years now. I would have to say you're more spiritual than me. Would you say that you're kind of a pretty spiritual person in that sense?
Yeah, I mean, I think in my own way, everyone has their own relationship with that part of themselves or their life. I wouldn't call myself religious, but I am spiritual in the sense of I personally feel connected to like a greater power in the universe, things that are bigger than myself, and also just the fact that everyone and everything is connected. And I think that's that's an important, in my opinion, it's an important thing for us all to be more connected to because of this whole climate change crisis and globalization that's happening in the world. We're all humans here together, and I think the more we can feel that we come from the same place, we're all born alone, we die alone, and then we're all here together in between. And I think just coming from a place of love and trying to spread love between people as much as we can.
Despite
our differences.
And so, I mean, this is, in terms of medicine and your kind of philosophy on medicine, how you practice it, do you think your spirituality has any influence on that? I mean, this is also kind of a loaded question because, you brought up religion, and, it's best to kind of leave the politics of religion out of science for the most part. But I feel like spiritualism or spirituality or practice of that it's a little bit different from religion because you're not exactly the worship aspect, that kind of unilateral mindset is not quite there. But do you feel like it has any kind of impact on how you practice as a doctor?
So I think it does. I often will find myself when I'm working with a patient, just trying to connect with them on an energetic level, and not necessarily like doing anything different, but just, I mean, I think we all do that as vets without even really thinking about it. We're trying to, you know, if you have a patient that you're working with, you want them to feel calm, right? So you might take a deep breath. And I think,
like, your body language, your aura that you
exactly.
give off to them.
Yeah. And it doesn't have to be super like woo woo, like, oh, your aura, all that. But I do think that, you know, if you look at animals in the wild, like, they are, you could call them like telepathic, because they're basically mind reading each other through these subtle body cues. And they're so subtle, it's stuff that we don't even think about unless you're very aware of your own energy in your body. So I think from a practical sense, being spiritual, it's more of just like being aware of what energies are around. And it's not like, you know, it's not like astrology and those things like that. Those aren't practical. They're fun, but they're not practical.
You're not singing hymns to the owner.
Right, kind exactly. Of, yeah. I mean, sometimes I want to do stuff like that. Like during, you know, sad euthanasias, I'm like, oh, I just want to like sing them a song, but it might be not the right thing. So there has to be that professional discretion where I'm kind of in my own, having my own boundaries with it. So I'm not being any kind of overbearing or projecting onto like them and their experience. But
so let's get into euthanasias. How do you approach euthanasias? I mean, let's kind of make it a little bit easier. There's an animal, a patient of yours, that's it's very noticeably terminal, no matter what the disease is. And like, it's for sure going to happen. So we don't have to talk about convincing the owner to do it, because that's a whole nother topic. But, you know, you're in the family room or exam room or whatnot, the, you know, the catheter is in, you have your injections ready, and the owner is ready. And now you enter the room.
Right.
What are you thinking at the time? What's your whole process?
Yeah, so I think it's a little hard because, as you know, every situation is so different. So what I'm trying to do the most is just be respectful to where the people are at with their grieving process, and kind of being there just to hold space for them and try to make it go as smooth as possible. So I try to obviously explain what's going to happen so that they have expectations, and we're on the same page for what the plan is. And generally I will, as I, you know, once I make sure that they're all ready, then as I'm, you know, doing the procedure, I'll usually start saying, oh, we love you to the pet. And then it's crazy because I feel like me saying that always just makes everyone start. It's like unplugging the drain of their emotions, and they just start outpouring things to their pet, like saying things, you know, emotional.
It cuts off almost that social kind of barrier between
it's like,
the two.
It okay, really opens this is up it. Like, this room. Is our last moment. Like, say your last words, because that's what we want the pet to leave knowing and hearing the voices of.
That's a great way to, I've never actually spoken, well, I've said a couple, you know, on a few occasions I've spoken directly to the pet during the procedure, but, you know, to have something as meaningful, you know, and as powerful as that, I think that's really something to consider. That's great.
I remember in vet school, one of our residents, we did a euthanasia together, and it was just me and her, and as she did it, she sang Twinkle Twinkle Little Star to the cat, and it literally made me cry. And I always think about that, and I feel like I couldn't do it without crying. But I think it's the sweetest, because it's just like, yes, like, you're just like, you're going up to the stars now.
So we've been out for 2 years now. How's the last 2 year journey been for you?
It's been good. I mean,
obviously you're very, you know, mentally aware, trying to keep yourself balanced.
I moved back home, which I was really happy to be able to do that. I wasn't really sure where I was going to go for a while. And then I ended up deciding to move home, just because of some family health issues. And I had a really good support system there. So I decided to move there rather than going somewhere completely new where I didn't know anyone, even though that would have been a cool experience. And I was kind
cool
of
for me. So
yeah,
far, so.
I was kind of looking for that in a way, but it was just too hard for me at that time. I didn't want to just start over by myself when I was going through. I actually lost a parent. So
I'm sorry.
Yeah. So that was a really hard thing. Like so much life transition happening as you're graduating vet school and like deciding where you're going to start your career and, you know, then having that happen too. So I was lucky that I had a safe harbor to go to. And then I was able to start right away in a job in general practice.
Great.
And yeah, they've been really good to me and, you know, just mentoring me, but also allowing me to develop my own style of medicine. They've been really supportive of my acupuncture. They've paid for my rehab training.
You were telling me that. That's awesome.
Yeah. I feel really lucky that they've been so supportive. And they've even given me half of the building for now to utilize.
Wow.
So it's a big empty room that we now use for all the lameness exams and running over Cavaletti poles and playing with balance discs and stuff like that.
That's so
all the
cool.
fun rehab toys.
And did you kind of ask for this, or did they just suddenly notice that you were interested and go like, you know what, let's kind of make this a thing for you, and like if you want, do you want to expand?
Yeah, no, they knew from the start. I think I came in there, they had already purchased a laser, but like no one was using it. So my boss was actually interested in, you know, having a new staff member, like a younger, more of like a, you know, I was a new grad. So I think he was wise to utilize my interests to have a more integrative medicine offering for our clients, because we definitely didn't currently have that.
Okay.
And we've had a really great response from our clientele to the offerings of, you know, acupuncture, laser, and now the rehab.
Yeah. How big is that in Hawaii? Because I know we were saying that just specialists in general are kind of few and far between.
Yeah.
General practitioners, I guess, are also quite rare or maybe scant. But on top of it, I guess looking into more certified or special, you know, micro specialist fields, it must be pretty rare to have someone with your expertise in Hawaii.
Yeah, I think, you know, I live on Oahu, which is the most populated island. It's the most urban and developed. So there's obviously going to be a lot more specialists and vets on my island. So there's two other CCRTs there right now. And so I'll be the third.
Okay.
On the other islands, I don't believe there are any. So, you know, there's potential for traveling to do some, but it just depends on time and energy. How much can I pack into my schedule?
Is your end game, and I don't know if you've kind of, in 5 years, are you thinking about, do you picture yourself remaining in Hawaii, or do you see yourself somewhere else?
So that's a good question. I currently have two geriatric horses and two geriatric dogs.
Okay.
So I'm kind of waiting to see, you know, how that plays out. I want to 100% be there for them until the end and, you know, not be living somewhere else until they're all gone, to be frank.
Yeah.
Because they're all pets I've had since they were little babies, and I want to be there with them until they're gone. They're half the reason I went to vet school was to learn how to take care of them.
Yeah.
So, I think, you know, once that phase of life is over where my childhood pets are passed on, then I might consider living elsewhere. I've always wanted to live abroad, so I've thought about maybe moving to an English-speaking country like Australia or New Zealand, or maybe somewhere in Europe. But we'll just see. I mean, you know, practice ownership is always something cool to be on the horizon,
and we should all think about that.
But I think if I had a practice, I might want it to be more of a mobile rehab practice because that gives you so much flexibility.
Yeah.
I was actually, one of the jobs I was looking at when I was about to graduate was with Lap of Love. Mm-hmm. And they're a, I think, Florida-based, but now they're nationwide, at-home euthanasia service.
Okay.
And I'm really impressed by their business model and the service that they provide to their clients. So yeah. I had talked with them about potentially setting up a franchise with them in Hawaii, but then I kind of decided, you know, I don't want my first job out of school to just be doing euthanasias all day.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe someday, you know, that might be my calling. But right now, I think I enjoy the live animals.
Yeah.
I also had an interest in being a pathologist early on, which, again, once I
realized you're not a sociopath.
Awesome, yeah, right. Dark in the dungeon with my microscope. Yeah, I
know some of the smartest people are pathologists.
Exactly. They're
just
great.
Just kidding.
I think it was more that I wanted to understand disease and just, I know that that's probably one of the best ways to do it, but I think I have other things that I'm more interested in now.
At the end of the day, people end up doing a residency 10 years after, you know, there are some people who do that. So exactly. Who knows, right?
Yeah,
I think, as vets, we have so many open doors for us to do so many different things.
Yep. That's why I think vet school is better than grad school.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
For some of us, unless you really want to be a researcher.
Yeah. And specifically study one particular thing or one aspect of one thing.
But, yeah. Because then you really get niched in that field,
mm-hmm.
which can be good or bad, depending on your goals. But I'm more of a... like you said, well-rounded, focused, and just I'd rather have be kind of a jack of all trades, master of none, than like a full-on specialist in one particular thing. But that could change too.
Yeah.
I think it's always good to, like you were asking about what I see for myself in 5 years or more, but I think it's always good for everyone just to remember to like, don't just allow yourself to change as you get older.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you will change and that's okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, for our new graduate or our vet student listeners, if you can give one piece of advice, not that anyone's asking, it could be absolutely silly. It could be totally, you know, obscure, or it could be very, very meaningful. But is there anything that you'd recommend, you know, for a new person 2 days in?
2 days into vet school?
Yeah, or two days into just getting their DVM license.
Yeah. You know? Well, I know for sure I would tell any brand new vet student that the number one skill you have to master is time management.
Okay.
I just really believe in that. And I think that that will serve anyone in and out of your career for your entire life.
Definitely.
But yeah, I'd say to new veterinarians, I guess just... you know, it's like what everyone says, find a good practice that will support your interests and mentor you, but not in a domineering way.
Micromanagement kind of system, yeah. Because
mm-hmm. you want to do things the way that it feels right. I mean, that's part of like the art of medicine is you have to sometimes make a judgment call. And if you're going off of, you know, always just doing it the same way that this guy told you, when you're on your own, you're not going to know. So you have to develop your, you have to develop like that sense of acting on your instinct of like what feels like needs to be done.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes that's all you have.
All right. So now we are at our last segment. It's called the OMA sarcoma. For any new listeners, this is something I stole from Eliza Schlesinger's podcast. She's a really popular comedian. Hers is called Top of the Cob. Because, you know, when you eat the dessert, you're like the peach crumble. The top of that peach cobbler is like so – it's like the best crumbly part.
And flaky crust.
Exactly. And the bottom is all like mushy and gunky. So the top of the cob is something that you're obsessed with or something you really like at the moment. And then the bottom of the cob is something that's just not – something you're unhappy about or something you hate at the moment. So what is your top of the cob?
I didn't think you were going to call it that. I thought.
Or I'm sorry, what is your OMA?
I totally,
this is what I meant. What is your OMA?
So I so can you ask me again? I can edit that out.
Nope.
Oh my god. Well, I think one OMA would be just drinking water.
Uh-huh.
That's
interesting.
I drink a lot of water, and not so much, obviously, that it's gonna cause sodium issues, because that would be bad. But yeah, I think it's crazy because I see people all the time, and I'm around them all day, and I never see them drink any water.
Uh-huh.
Like maybe some soda.
Yeah, no,
but I don't know how they're alive.
Yeah, I actually, when I go to the restaurant, I rarely ever order anything but water. And it's not even because like I'm trying to be cheap about it. I mean, sometimes I am, I'm not going to lie, but it's also just because I really want a nice cold glass of ice water. Yeah. And that just tastes so well with everything else that I eat at restaurants.
Yeah, I think I've just become more aware of my level of dehydration, like chronic dehydration. Mm-hmm. And that if I'm not, from this moment that I wake up, chugging water and then chugging water throughout the day, I'm probably not getting enough.
So do you ever feel like dehydrated, and then when you finally have a glass of water, you feel like your brain goes from like one of those very dry hard sponges and just kind of kind of fills up again?
Yeah, I think I've gotten so used to drinking water all the time that if I like go on a hike and I don't have water for a couple hours, and I start kind of panicking.
Uh-huh.
I'm like, oh my god, like I'm getting a headache. I'm so dehydrated, but really, it's fine. I think I'm just used to having my cup of water with me all the time. Everyone who's, all my friends know, I always have my water cup or my water bottle. But yeah, I mean, we all know how important hydration is. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of crazy how much you have to drink to actually be hydrated. So I get headaches kind of easily, and I also get lightheaded. My blood pressure tends to be low.
Okay.
So I kind of have to drink a lot to make sure I'm not hypovolemic.
Keeping that blood volume.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
So anyone on my podcast, please on my Instagram, comment the blood pressure formula. All right, cardiac output, heart rate, what was that again? Please comment on the Instagram for that. All right.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I would say my OMA, I already mentioned this, but this is something that I've been doing a lot the last couple of weeks. But I've gotten into MMA. And nice. There was a boxing gym and a Muay Thai jiu-jitsu gym like a mile away from me. So one of my biggest limiting factors is driving to the gym. So anything less than like 2 minutes is a hassle for me. So when I moved here, there's a 24 that was like 15 minutes away, but with all the stupid stoplights in Florida, it can take me 35 minutes.
Yeah, so like, no one wants to have to drive to go to the gym.
No,
more than a couple minutes.
So yeah, so I ended up going to take these guys, and I took some free classes for both of them, and I loved both of them, so I signed up for both of them. And you know, I'm actually turning 30 in 6 days, and my goal really was to just kind of turn, you know, change my lifestyle a little bit. I've always been active, like doing sports, did college stuff, high school stuff, but I kind of fell off the wagon, you know, after I stopped those and vet school, obviously, and all that stuff in between. Oh, yeah. And now I've been working, you know. So I've gone to the gym like 2 times in the last couple of years. So, you know, joining this was something to kind of keep me going. And it's been such a good kind of humbling experience. One of the things I really like about it was, you know, as an ER doctor, or just even as a doctor in general, you're the one who's kind of orchestrating everything. You have to be in control. You have to be the one to make sure everything's in order.
Yeah, that's very true.
When it comes to martial arts, I feel like I get to kind of submit to all that, and I just get to just listen to the coach, listen to the, you know, just go along with the art of it and the whole practice. And that's been such a good experience for me. And like, I'm physically tired constantly. I might have had a concussion last week, but it's been,
oh God.
But it's been so fun. It's been so great for me.
That's so good. Yeah, yeah. It's like, it feels so nice to take your work hat off.
Yeah.
And be in a different I guess, power position.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Sometimes I feel like when you're the doctor at work, it can kind of spill over into your home life.
Yep.
I always have to remember not to order my boyfriend around like he's a tech. Like, get that. Go grab me that.
It's so easy. Just kidding.
But yeah.
Because we have such dominating type A personalities for the most part.
But it's part of, like, I think when you're adaptable, it's like there's strength and flexibility, right?
Yeah.
So practicing that is so awesome.
Yeah. And then, you know, this kind of goes into what, you know, your importance of overall wellness and well-roundedness is. I mean, so, you know, having some kind of physical activity, I think, is really important just to kind of keep us balanced for sure.
Yeah. Especially for people our age. Like, we're supposed to be in our prime in our 30s or something like that. And, you know, I think it's really easy in vet school to just let yourself go or stop working out. I mean, some people did great and they would go run all the time as their stress relief, which I admired, but I could never do that.
John Onaga, actually, Dr. Onaga, actually, he's also another Hawaiian vet.
He was
one of the most in shape people.
I know.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's so good to use fitness as a stress reliever.
Absolutely. Because
I actually don't want to go on a tangent, but I heard this really cool research that some human doctors were doing on just completing the stress cycle, which is basically kind of, if you imagine like a caveman, you know, they get stressed by the tiger running at them, their cortisol secretes, and then they run away, and then that completes the stress cycle. So something that modern humans are lacking a lot of is we still are getting these stressful stimuli, but then we don't go run or do something like aerobic fitness after, and so your body just stays in that chronic high sympathetic tone. And so, yeah, I think.
And that high cortisol, it ultimately affects your immune system, affects so many parts of your body.
Yeah. There's nothing worse than being sick when you're a vet.
Self-generated Cushing's is what we call it.
Adrenal fatigue. Yeah.
Yeah.
All those things.
Okay. So what is your sarcoma?
So I have been really bummed out about the acidification of the oceans and how all the coral reefs are dying. And I just read today that some sad figure that I hope isn't true, but it said that a lot of the coral reefs will be gone by 20 years.
So 2040?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And so that means I only have 20 years left to go scuba dive all over the world, which, you know, I don't want it to be gone for future generations. Yep. And they said by 2100 that the ocean will be basically, you know, the conditions, it'll be so acidified and everything that, and so warm that it will be uninhabitable conditions for coral. Uh-huh. Unless some, you know, we can make genetically modified coral or something like that. But yeah, it's really sad because
it's actually like, it's almost an unbelievable statistic. I mean, to hear that it's gone in 20 years, I almost, like, my knee-jerk reaction is not to believe it.
Yeah. But I've seen it when I go diving in Hawaii, like, there's not as much reef as there used to be. The reef is, there's bleaching events happening all the time. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's saying like this, the coral reef is like the foundation of the ecosystem of all the ocean ecosystems.
Yeah.
Because that's where, you know, that's where all the life is. It's all happening there. So it'll be really interesting to see what happens with everything in the natural world in the next, you know, decades. It's kind of scary, but I also try to be positive and think like the nature has gone through difficult, you know, events of disturbances in the conditions before, and things always just fluctuate and evolve. And I mean, things will be different for sure, but I don't think it's going to be like everything's just gone and we're living on this barren rock.
Not yet, hopefully.
Yeah. You got to be positive.
It's going to be positive.
Yeah.
We got 20 years. Let's be positive.
Not long enough. Yeah. What's your sarcoma?
My sarcoma, I was thinking about this. Obviously I have so many things to complain about when it comes to like owners and how sometimes we're being treated or how they treat their dogs. So, or cats. So I'm going to try to delay as long as I can until I start complaining about that. But I think one, and this is also one I think everyone feels about, but I have a personal vendetta against mosquitoes.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just because they not only do they, you know, have like kill the most people in the world per year out of everything
do
else.
They really?
I think, yeah. Like, I think they, like 500, was it 500,000? You can look at
little vectors.
Yeah, Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. They I mean, they spend billions of dollars towards this just because it's such a destructive organism. Wow. Yeah, but I mean, for me on a personal level, I'm just very allergic. And
oh, you have a hypersensitivity.
I do,
just like the cats.
Yeah, and they'll bite me, and it'll swell up like it'll like centimeters long, and it's like it or wide, and it's itchy forever, and I lose sleep. And they buzz in my ear, and I'm now in Florida where there's
that
a lot
sucks.
Of them.
I understand your struggle.
And so I don't know if you ever noticed this, but like with mosquitoes, I'll see them flying in midair, and I follow them with my eye, and then suddenly they disappear.
Yeah, you know why?
They're
vampire,
multidimensional
fairies. If you think about it,
yeah,
they're tiny little vampires fly around, and they suck your blood. So that's why I always call them that.
You just romanticize mosquitoes. Yeah, no, yeah. I'll look at them and I'll stare them right in their stupid bodies and see them fly, and then suddenly they'll just disappear. I feel like they have this, they like evolutionarily have this pattern that allows them to kind of phase out of dimensions.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's so frustrating.
I know. Yeah. They've got that teleporting thing down. Yeah, it's crazy to me to think in Hawaii there were no mosquitoes. Like in the beginning, because, you know, there was nothing there really. It was in the middle of the ocean and humans brought mosquitoes there.
Oh, wow.
So I can't imagine
that sucks.
The ancient Hawaiians or whichever, if there were ever people there prior to mosquitoes being introduced, how incredible it must have been just to have there be no mosquitoes. You're just wandering through the jungle. And in Hawaii, there's the only things that are really native there are birds and snails.
That's it.
Yeah.
Okay.
They've got all sorts of different speciation of the Hawaiian birds, and then there's like hundreds of different species of native snails. But then
rats,
all sorts of things got introduced
Sorry.
And messed that up. But it's still pretty limited, the wildlife population there.
And when they're really strict about it, I mean, with animals entering and leaving.
Oh yeah,
for the most part.
Yeah,
you know?
A lot of pets are illegal there that are legal in other states, like ferrets are illegal, gerbils, hamsters, snakes, tarantulas.
I didn't know the last two were illegal.
Yeah, pretty much anything except for like dogs, cats, and a few
horses,
pocket pets. Yeah.
Okay.
Those are the only legal ones.
Okay.
But yeah, people still find ways to smuggle them in, which blows my mind.
Like,
I don't know why.
People are stupid.
I know.
I should probably edit
they
that
really
out.
Are.
I might not. My listeners aren't stupid though, right?
No, of course not.
Okay, well, thanks so much for joining me on this podcast.
Yeah,
I
thanks
really
for having me.
You're the first guest. What an honor, right?
Yeah.
What an honor to have you here. Well, best of luck to everything. You know, in 2 months you'll be certified, and that's super, super awesome. I hope you're able to kind of really explore that and kind of continue that. Obviously, I'll see if I can get some links to your Wolfis DJ and see if anyone's interested in listening to that.
Get some music.
Get some music going. We were jamming to that in the car the other day. And that's it. All right.
Thank you.
Of course. All right. Thanks so much, guys. We'll catch you later.